Welcome to Conversations with Doc Martin. This video series focuses on extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. Please do not forget to hit the subscribe button and click the notifications so you do not miss out on our next guest. Today, we're privileged to be joined by the Honorable Judge Heather S. Russell. Judge Russell has had a very distinguished career. She's attained her degree from the University of Cincinnati College of Law in 1983, and then went on to be a Hamilton County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney, elected to the Loveland, Ohio City Council, and then since 2002 has served multiple terms on the Hamilton County Municipal Court, as well as serving as a mental health court judge. Not only is she accomplished in her field, she's been recognized by the community and by her peers time and time again. She was recently one of Cincinnati Inquirer's 10 Women of the Year awardees. In 2019, she was named as one of three outstanding alumni by the University of Cincinnati Law Alumni Association. She's been awarded the Model of Justice Award from the Ohio Crime Victim Services, and in 2018 was awarded Cincinnati Bar Association's Outstanding Female Counselor. With all this, why are we here today speaking to her honor? Well, since 2014, she's volunteered her time to help women in presiding over Change Court. And CHANGE is an acronym which stands for Changing Habits and Setting New Goals is Empowering. So, Your Honor, welcome to you today. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be with you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, let's kind of take a step back and talk about where this all started. And you've had this long, distinguished career. You've been a presiding judge since 2002. As I mentioned in the introduction, you volunteer your time for Change Court. So tell our viewers a little bit about kind of how this all started and what Change Court does.
Well, thank you. And Dr. Martin, please call me Heather.
Yes. Well, I guess it's important. We kind of be honest with everybody because we've known each other my entire life, right? Because our families were really, really close. Your mother was my godmother. So yeah. We've known each other for many, many years. And it's, I'm so excited to share you with the viewers and my friends. So please.
Thank you. Okay. So how did I get to be creating Change Court? I think I almost feel it was something that was sort of building on my whole career, professional career, because as a prosecutor back in the 80s, there weren't very many women prosecutors. So it felt very natural when cases of child sexual abuse and adult sexual abuse were assigned to the women in the office. So I started as a very young prosecutor prosecuting those type of victim cases, also domestic violence cases, and then homicides that were results of domestic violence, and then straight out homicide. So I've been dealing with victims my whole professional career. And I think that's, police knew that, and that's why they came to me in 2014 to describe a problem. So, and this is how they got the problem. There is an area in Cincinnati, near downtown, near the University of Cincinnati, actually, called West McMicken Avenue. And it was known as an open air human trafficking, an open air prostitution market, where there were literally streetwalkers that would stake out their corner in the morning when the business homeowners went to work. And then the Johns would sort of travel up and down the street trolling. They'd pick their date, they'd go off and do their business, leaving behind graffiti, syringes, litter, other crime, and of course, brokenhearted, downhearted prostitutes. Yeah. And the West McMicken community went to the city of Cincinnati, to city council, and complained. Number one, they wanted their neighborhood back, but they could see that nothing good was ever happening for these men, women, and trans, actually. Nothing was happening. They would see the police arrest them. And then because our jail is always overcrowded, the first people released from jail were these prostituted people, because there's no room in jail for low-level offenders. And at the time, everyone thought there's no victim. It's a victimless crime. So they were just released. So the neighborhood saw, number one, their neighborhood was deteriorating, and they saw nothing good was ever happening for these people. They were not being offered any way out. So they brought their problem to City Hall, And they took some steps, civil steps. They increased fines for people who were caught engaging, the Johns engaged in prostitution. They created civil forfeiture if they used their car to find their prostitute. They enacted forfeitures. But it wasn't enough, so they took it to the police, who are great problem solvers, critical thinkers, at least in my town. That's sure. my opinion. Yeah. And the police worked on it for a while, trying to figure out, why is this open air market going on? It doesn't go on anywhere else that we know of in Hamilton County. Everywhere else it's going on in the internet and in hotels. Couldn't really figure out how this had developed, but they eventually asked to speak to me, which is rather unusual for police to ask to speak privately to a judge, and said, we want someone to create a program for these people with structure, with compassion, and offer them a way out. We want somebody who's going to be firm but compassionate. We want, and given that there are 14 of us municipal court judges, we want one judge to hear all the cases. We want it to be a woman, and we want it to be you. And they didn't know. I mean, they knew they were coming with a big ask. They were very appreciative of any help I could offer. The thing is, they didn't know they were describing a specialty court, but I knew they were describing a specialty court because, as you said, I had been presiding over a mental health specialty court since 2006, I think, at that time. Mm-hmm. So I knew what they were describing. And I said, let me look around and see if we have enough arrests of this nature to justify creating a program. So it's really easy, not for me, but for somebody to run a computer query running that particular statute, the prostitution statute, to see if we had a significant number of arrests, which we did. And then, because Hamilton County encompasses the city of Cincinnati and over 40 other municipalities like Montgomery, Blue Ash, Loveland, Colerain, lots of places. So then the next thing I did was look around to see if anybody anywhere in the world was doing anything of this nature. And I found Columbus, Ohio, 100 miles up the road. They had this program. So the officers and myself and a couple of others, we contacted that judge and we drove up to Columbus to watch his docket. And it looked just like the mental health court docket, except with a different population.
Oh, wow.
So I knew I could do it.
Sure. That's amazing. That's absolutely incredible. And, you know, I know that you've had success after success. Of course, it's not an easy thing. And it's a really challenging thing to not only get out of that world, but also be on the helping side of getting people out of that world. And I was watching some of your interviews, and one of the things you said was to save a life is to save the world.
And I hope that sounds familiar to you.
Yes, 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 yes. And so I would love to talk from a personal perspective on your side about what you've observed from these women, how it's fit into your life, I guess would be a way to put it. And frankly, how it's changed maybe even your perspective on humanity.
Oh, that's a great question. Well, so first of all, the inside joke going on there, that thought to save a life is to save the world origins are from the Talmud. So
absolutely.
It's definitely drawing on my faith background there. It has changed my life. It has changed the way I look at people. And not only in dealing with the people that I see weekly in Change Court, but you know, I'm still doing my regular municipal court docket, which is a caseload of roughly 50 cases every morning. And so it changes the way I deal with those people too, because now I have insight. So municipal court is a lower level of criminal offenses. So where I used to prosecute rapes and murders, the cases I hear now are, it could be a traffic ticket, it could be domestic violence, a lot of DUIs, OVIs, prostitution, shoplifting, even contract, breach of contract ideas. But usually the people I'm dealing with are not bad people, they're people who have made bad decisions. And so now, I'm always interested in knowing what brought you to the place where you're shoplifting a steak in Kroger's.
Right.
What brought you to a place where you feel the need to trespass at the Sunoco station after they told you not to come back 20 times. And I understand now almost, well, we knew, we all of us know, judges know, almost everything we see in front of us at this point is drug driven. Mm-hmm. That people are drug seeking, or they mm-hmm. need money for drugs, or they're stealing grandma's pearls to sell for drugs. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it's also trauma driven. And so I am able to see almost everybody who comes in front of me now the same way I see my Change Corps participants, which is they are a victim of some kind of adverse childhood experience. Mm-hmm. Or more recently an adult experience, but they're, you know, a lot of people have funny ways of dealing with their trauma.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they get angry, belligerent, they threaten people. And there's usually something, you know, I mean, I can be angry with you, but I'm probably not going to get a gun and threaten to kill you. there's usually some kind of trauma involved in it. So it does change the way I look at all my cases. But beyond that, when I see, they're all women. I've had the programs open to men. No men have taken me up on it. I did have one trans person. Mm-hmm. who went AWOL and then got into other trouble, and I wasn't able to take them back. But so I refer to women. It is not only therapeutic for them when they are getting stronger mm-hmm. and cleaner and making good decisions and showing gratitude, but it keeps me motivated to do my job, not only with them, but again, with that regular morning docket, because before this, the only people I ever saw in my case were, okay, you committed a shoplifting. Well, I'm either going to put you in jail, probably not likely for shoplifting. I'm going to give you fines and costs. I'm going to put you on probation. Those mm-hmm. are my options. And right. then I never see them again. So I never know if they've done well. The only time I see that individual again is if they violate probation. So right. I'm only seeing the repeat offenders, the bad people. I never see that anyone got some help on probation and moved forward and never committed criminal behavior again. When I'm with these participants week in and week out, I can see that people are able to change with a lot of help, a lot of intense one-on-one help mm-hmm. from a lot of different segments of the community. And I see them wanting to get jobs and wanting to reconnect to their family. And I see them moving on. We help them with housing. We help them with health, mm-hmm. a lot of dental issues.
Yeah.
A lot of them need all their teeth pulled because they've mm-hmm. neglected them for so long. And when you see someone getting stronger and happier, it is contagious. So yeah, it does. It's wonderful for me personally.
Absolutely. We had Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar on the show too, who is a doctor, PhD in positive psychology, taught at Harvard. And we talked a bit about this whole concept of self-perception theory and how you end up talking to yourself and you're saying those kind of negative things to yourself and judging yourself really and perceiving yourself in a given way, kind of like how you perceive other people with or without additional information. And so this downward spiral of negative self-talk and negative sense of self, lack of self-esteem, lack of self-worth is pervasive. And I think it's actually one of the reasons why I decided to do this, because the longer I've been on this beautiful planet, the more I end up coaching people either privately or within the guise of my full-time job, which I love so much. I realize that success, as society normally couches it, has nothing to do with how you think about yourself. And that whether you're a multimillionaire and a celebrity, or you have somebody that appears to your change court that really their life is spinning out of control, we all have these negative self-thoughts. And I think it's fantastic that you're there and the county is there and the state is there to help these women. And as I was doing my research for our time today, I just thought it was so fascinating. Some of the women said things like, you know, I learned not just how to live, I learned how to live, not just how to survive. Another woman said, you know, I'm starting to love myself. And I thought that was absolutely fantastic. And then something you said that I thought was amazing was, you know, happy, sober lives and having good, clean fun has a whole different meaning when you're in sobriety. And talk to us a little bit about, I know you talked about this in some of your interviews to the local area, but talk a little bit about your first case where she didn't trust you, and she didn't trust, as you put it, she didn't trust herself. So talk to us a little bit about that first case, because it was it's a great story.
So there was one of our very first people that we brought into the program. Yeah, she just didn't know what to think. She didn't trust anyone. And why would she trust a system when in a system where, since she was a little girl, you know, really betrayed by her family, mm-hmm. Let down, was not able to care for her own children. They were taken from her. She was on the streets. She got arrested and was offered this program. Of course, she hadn't heard of it. Not very many people had heard of it.
Sure.
And she didn't trust herself because she'd always been told, you can't do this. Mm-hmm. You're less than, you're worthless. Mm-hmm. We're taking your children away. So her grandparents had two of her daughters. Her husband actually had her son and then wasn't letting her see her son at all. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's kind of like whenever I go on a diet, like, oh, this isn't going to work. It never works. I drop off after a couple of weeks, and that's, you know, it's just a self-perpetuating cycle. I can't do this. I don't believe in myself. I know your program works, but I can't do it. And for the people coming into this program, why would they trust police who are arresting them?
Sure.
You know, and some of them may have had bad experiences with the police, although I haven't actually heard that. And why would they trust a judge who's there to put them in jail or look down on them and judge, you know, them, and they're dirty, they don't have education. So it is really hard for them to believe in themselves that they can do a program and to believe in a criminal justice system, which traditionally has not been known to mm-hmm. offer a way out, just to judge them and punish them and put them away. So that was a really hard thing for her to do. But she can't, and actually, I hate to say it, but to this day, and she, knock on wood, she's doing fantastically well. She will say to this day that her public defender lawyer told her not to do this program, mm-hmm. which that person denies. He's no longer in the office, but she said she was released from jail, and she sat outside an administrative office literally for 3 days waiting for direction from that lawyer, and no one could get, the lawyer wouldn't answer the call. So finally the administrative offices called me and we got her moving along. That woman actually never relapsed, never had a stumble in the program for 2 years. She went, I mean, it wasn't easy for her, mm-hmm. But she went straight through, and she would tell us many, many stories. Well, first of all, she was getting stronger. Her, she wanted to see her son. Her grandparents mm-hmm. would let her see her daughters, but the baby daddy wouldn't let her see her son. But we mm-hmm. knew what school he was in, and we knew she had papers allowing supervised visitation from juvenile court. So my coordinator one day just said, hey, let's go with your papers to the school. Mm-hmm. Let's go buy, you know, I don't know, drive-through lunch.
Sure.
And let's go up to the school, show me your papers, and ask, can you take him out for lunch? Mm-hmm. She was like, really, you would do that for me? Mm-hmm. And they pulled him out of class. He didn't know it was coming, and she got to have lunch with him. It was the first time she'd seen him.
Wow.
In years. And I mean, when they told that story in court, we were all just crying, you know, that my coordinator had thought of it, because she hadn't told me ahead of it, but that she got to see her son. And her son was doing very, very poorly in school because dad wasn't making him go to school. And with our help, she petitioned juvenile court for an order to enforce the order that she had mm-hmm. supervised visitation, and she got it. So then she was able to get regular visits with her son, and now she has custody of her son. And I think it's this, I'm not sure which school year it was, but at some point he lived with her, which was in a different school district. So she got him. And she changed schools, and she was worried when she transferred that they were going to make him repeat it grade because he had missed so much. Mm-hmm. But I think over the summer she got him caught up, and he's on the honor roll now.
That's amazing.
On his appropriate grade level. But she also told us stories about how when she went into addiction, that first her electricity was cut off, and then other things happened, which is why, you know, the system came in and took her kids. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she was out on the streets. And her kids, and she would play a game where they would be on the school bus going back to grandma's house, and they would see her on the street. And of course they wanted to see her. So they'd be looking through the school bus, trying to catch a glimpse of her on the street. And she would hide because she didn't want them to see her. And her oldest daughter wrote about that, what that felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And then what it felt like to watch her mother regain herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then it strengthened the daughter, and the daughter wrote that and got a college scholarship.
Wow.
And was the first in her family to be offered the opportunity for college. Now that woman is out, she's connected with all of her family, and she's giving back. She works as a peer counselor in one of the agencies that helps me, that collaborates
That's
with
amazing.
Me. And she's got a car. Actually, Marty, you'll like this. When your godmother passed away mm-hmm. in 2018, it was just about the time that this woman was getting her own apartment mm-hmm. and she didn't have any furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So all of Faye's furniture went.
Oh, that's amazing.
And she's still got it. Now she's bought a car. She's doing
that's
great.
Amazing. That's incredible.
So we know, we didn't just help her. We helped lift her children. Mm-hmm. And actually that oldest daughter now has a baby, and she's a great, you know, she's able to be involved as a grandmother in ways she wasn't so much involved as a mother. So it's really generations that are, the cycle is broken.
Absolutely.
Of bad stuff.
That's absolutely incredible. So, you know, not only are you giving of your time, you're literally giving of your possessions to some of the people that present to Change Court. And, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you, and it's making me think about the whole concept of trauma and how we all process trauma, and how some individuals, you know, many people have read articles where some individuals that have cancer, in fact, my good friend Sean Swarner is one of our guests as well, who climbed Mount Everest with one lung, having survived two cancers. Yeah. And, you know, he's the epitome of how trauma can change you and make you more resolved. And then other people, they have a life-threatening challenge, whether it be cancer or life circumstance, et cetera, excuse me, and go the opposite end of the spectrum. And, you know, it just makes me think about, you know, I don't know if you ever read Viktor Frankl's book, A Man's Search for Meaning. He's a Holocaust survivor.
A very good friend of mine has recommended it to me. It's on my list.
It's fantastic. And, you know, if you read about Helen Keller and her concept of whole being, that drove Dr. Shahar's concept of what happiness is, about whole being. And so, you know, it's there's situation and circumstance after circumstance after circumstance that's outside of the world that you're describing, where we say, yes, somebody had trauma and, you know, they've been able to lift themselves out. And here we're talking about individuals that society typically looks down upon, that doesn't try to help. And as you just beautifully said, you broke the generational cycle. And it's just beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful, because it's giving another human being who is just simply a human being who's in a given circumstance a chance to change. And not everybody will, but giving the opportunity for those to change is spectacular. And so,
yeah. She tells me that too, you know, and then she's giving back. She's working in this field with this mm-hmm. population.
Yeah.
But she will tell me that. She will say, you know, Judge Russell, not everyone is going to make it in your program. It's a hard program. But then she'll say to me, you know, don't give up.
Yeah.
It's not your program is fine. There are no, you know, you've worked out all the glitches, all the gaps. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the people that you're offering it to have to want it too. But sometimes they just need a little nudge.
Exactly. So I'm really kind of curious, because and I'd be willing to bet our viewers are too, because we talked so much around Change Court and what it does for people and so forth. Can you just kind of give us a 30,000 foot view of actually what the program is? And I know you mentioned a multitude of services, one of which being dentistry. Like, how does it all work?
Well, a lot of the structure is based on Ohio Supreme Court requirements. So a lot of my structure was mandated for me, because in order to call myself a specialty court, there's certain things I have to offer. So mm-hmm. things like a treatment team, and mm-hmm. in my treatment team, I have to have my service providers, mm-hmm. A prosecutor and a defense lawyer, because after all, it is a concept of someone having crimes mm-hmm. and I can impose jail time, and then I'm suspending the jail time and putting them on probation. Mm-hmm. And the conditions of probation are that you follow the rules of change court. So that's why the attorneys need to be there to make sure that the state's interests are being met. And the defense lawyer is there to make sure that we're not running rampant over the defendant's constitutional rights.
Got it.
But I'm not doing anything outrageous and ordering outrageous consequences. Mm-hmm. I also have a change court coordinator, which is a lot of administrative stuff because there's a lot of I need to make a lot of connections for these people are so needy because mm-hmm. they haven't taken care of themselves for so long.
Sure.
They don't know how to ride a bus. They don't know how to keep a schedule. They don't know how to make a dentist appointment or mm-hmm. how they're going to get there. And then I have the actual probation officer. So all of those people are with me every week. So at my treatment team, I actually have, usually there are three main service providers that I work with because my participants are usually in treatment, actually four, in treatment mm-hmm. with one of those four at any one time. So if they're arrested, so it starts with an arrest, which is a difficult thing, but usually they're found in the act of prostitution or soliciting, or they could be arrested for shoplifting. And mm-hmm. I can explain to you the connection between mm-hmm. prostitution and other crimes that don't look like prostitution in a minute. So they're arrested. And if we determine, the police are usually really good at determining if they're eligible for change court. Mm-hmm. And then they'll call my coordinator who will come down to the jail and talk to them and offer this to them. That's a really tricky thing because they're usually still in addiction or they're going through withdrawal at that moment. Mm-hmm. And to ask them to do anything is not an easy ask. Because usually at that moment, they just want to get back out on the street for their next high.
Sure.
So we can offer it at several times in the prosecution of the case. So immediately upon arrest and pretty much every other stage beyond there, even after conviction, if they're put on probation by another judge, I can come in and mm-hmm, offer mm-hmm. it to them. So right now, for the last 6 years, if they say yes to change, they plead guilty to their charges. And it looks like on paper, I've thrown the book at them, that I've given them the maximum sentence on each of their cases mm-hmm. consecutively. Mm-hmm. And then I make them eligible for jail-based treatment, which is offered by Talbert House, which is the biggest name in treatment, mental health and substance abuse treatment in Ohio, Southwest mm-hmm. Ohio. Mm-hmm. So they're in a jail facility. They're not mm-hmm. in general population. They're in a building that's dedicated to treatment, and they're in groups all day long, individual and groups sessions, uh-huh. and then they have workbooks, they have things to do. So what's going on? And they're there for 90 days. And then what's going on in those 90 days? First of all, they're getting detoxed, and then they're just getting mentally stable, more stable, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. They're working with a case manager. If they want, we can even begin trying to connect with their family during that time. I bring them in to change court every other week as lockups. It's too much of a burden on the sheriff to bring them in every week.
Sure.
But they come in every week, every other week. So, which is good because then they see people who are farther along in
right.
their treatment.
Right.
See how well they're doing. And, you know, Cincinnati is a big, small town.
Yes.
So they actually many times recognize other women
on oh, wow.
the streets.
Yeah.
And that is really motivating for them. Like, I was sleeping in the same bed with you under the same bridge.
Yeah.
And look where you are. Yeah, I want what she's having. So
that's awesome.
It's a good, so they're there for 90 days. Although right now I'm looking to review that and see if I can get them out earlier. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that we're doing while they're there for 90 days is looking to put them into another residential facility. That residential treatment facility is always full. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have to make a reservation.
Sure.
Like, okay, so can you hold me a bed 90 days from today?
Because oh,
I've
wow.
got someone who's going to be ready to go in 90 days and they will hold a bed mm-hmm. for me. And, while they're in the 90 days also, we offer them medically assisted treatment. They can take Vivitrol and they can take Suboxone. Mm-hmm. And if they want, Vivitrol is our preference, which is you can take it by shot or by pill, mm-hmm. but it stops the craving mm-hmm. for opiates. It was actually sure. developed in Russia to stop the craving for alcohol, for vodka.
Interesting.
But it works on opiates. So it works, you would know this better than me, it works mm-hmm. on the brain receptors
okay.
that accept opiates, and it mm-hmm. blocks the keyhole. It doesn't open Yeah. So they don't want the opiate. So if they want that, we can get that started for them in this 90 days. We can get their liver panels checked to make sure that their liver can tolerate the Vivitrol. And then we give them their first shot about 2 or 3 days before their projected release. And then that's good for 30 days.
Okay.
And so then we pick the exact date they're moving to their next treatment, which is not a lockup facility. Mm-hmm. They've had their Vivitrol if they want it. And we literally pick them up at jail with any prescriptions they've been given in the jail and drive them 2 miles to their residential treatment. Now they're there for about 8 weeks. They're there. They have a case manager there. They're in groups and individuals. They can build up to passes. Uh-huh. They can see family. They have their phone. And they could walk away if they want. And they're coming to see me every week. And then from there, they move on to the third residential program, which is where they will stay till they graduate. Mm-hmm. Well, till close to graduation. So Change Court is, it's 2 years. So kind of break it up into 4 semesters, which are like phases. Mm-hmm. And so the first phase is you're locked down, really. Mm-hmm. You're in jail.
Yeah.
But then in the last phase, when you're in the last residential treatment, you're still doing groups, but you have much more liberty. You can go on weekend passes. And we're teaching you to get places on your own, because up till then we are making your appointments for the liver clinic, because they all have Hep C. We do have some that have HIV AIDS, so we're making those connections. We're getting them there. Then we're getting them independent enough that they can start making their own arrangements. And then in that last program, that is the last program, because they are the residential program in our area that has the great connection to a program called Strategies to End Homelessness. So they are connected to the housing piece. And through that agency, which is Cincinnati Union Bethel off the streets, they are responsible. They will get all their graduates housing.
That's amazing.
So they all get put on a list, and then they all get housing through various different agencies. Depending on the agency, some agencies will give them a fully furnished apartment. Mm-hmm. Some that doesn't come furnished at all. And then it falls to us to figure that part out. And so I've got somebody right now who came up on the list, approved actually for Section 8 for HUD housing for, but now she's going through their process to see if they will approve her, and they know her background. We expect her to be moving before the end of the month. We've already got furniture lined up. It's a non-furnished place. So then once they're in their own apartment, we are still seeing them perhaps every week for a while, and then eventually every other week. They're also getting jobs. Mm-hmm. So that 4 semesters is kind of like we take the training wheels off. We're standing at the end of the drive, seeing if you can make it on your own.
Absolutely.
But if you can't, we're right there to pick you up.
Yes.
You don't get kicked out of the program. It's second chances and 44th chances, and we'll meet you where you find you, and we'll get you right back on track. So that's the physical process, the legal process. The treatment team meets every Wednesday from 12 to 1:30. My participants are meeting on the other side of the room doing mindfulness activities, kind of like team building, confidence building, which could be yoga, could be martial arts, could be arts and crafts. And then we the two sides meet together around 1:32, and I talk to each woman in my courtroom on a status report with everyone else listening, because we're all learning from each other. We're all encouraging each other. And I forgot to tell you, the other person at the treatment team is a University of Cincinnati trauma psychologist.
Oh, excellent.
Who is on staff actually at the UC College of Medicine. She works with psychiatrists, but she, her specialty is trauma victims. So they see her as well every week.
That's really incredible. I mean, the comprehensiveness of this is unbelievable. And now I have not only do I have a clear understanding as to what the nuts and bolts are, it also makes a whole heck of a lot of sense why it's helped so many women, because of the comprehensiveness and the nature of the program. And so
it's a hard program too. So it's also the reason why a lot of people decline the program.
Sure.
Because they're scared to make a 2-year commitment.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a get out of jail free pass.
Right.
It's hard. But the other big bonus is all their misdemeanor cases get expunged the day they graduate
That's amazing.
So they're literally getting a fresh start. They have a job. They have their own house, housing. They are reconnected to family. Actually, everyone is reconnected to family. I mean, it's only if both sides want it.
Right.
And they get their misdemeanor records expunged. And then they have the opportunity, if they have more serious crimes, to go to those judges and ask for those cases to be expunged too. So
that's amazing.
Really trying to set them up for a lifetime, not just
nine
months while you're in my program. You could do that standing on your head kind of
thing. Right. So as we kind of wrap up our time together, I typically like to ask kind of a closing question. And I think for this conversation, I think what I'd love to ask you is, what's kind of been your biggest aha moment in this journey of Change Court? What was that moment where you thought, whoa, this is really changing lives and doing something for humanity?
Oh, they come all the time. I think that first woman that we talked about, mm-hmm. who has got my mother's furniture and is really living her life. You know, it's one thing for me to know I can do something. I can do this. I have the experience. I have the resources. Mm-hmm. I know what this program should look like. I can put this together. Mm-hmm. And then to tell an individual standing in front of me, I know you have this in you. You've had it within you all the time, my dear.
Yes.
But to actually, you know, and to I do believe it. I always believe it. But to actually see that first person make it, it's like, you know, that... that's just blessings over and over, you know, and
that's amazing.
She graduated in 2016. So yeah. And then to see her, you know, I see her from time to time. And I mean, you know, just the warm feeling I feel about her. I mean, and she's not perfect, but she's sober.
Yep.
She's very, very heavy. So she's, you know, I know not everything's in control for her, but she works hard. She's giving back in her community. She's with her children and a grandchild. And, mm-hmm. She's, you know,
she's gonna make
making it work. And that was the first, like, not only can I see it and do I know I can do it and I know they can do it, but somebody's actually doing it. And then there's a handful of them that are doing so incredibly well. So I get aha moments all the time. So 2 years ago, the same Cincinnati police who came to me with this problem to solve, they asked me to come to police training to talk mm-hmm. about it so that police understand when you're arresting a prostitute, you know, she's not just some dirty, immoral streetwalker. She's somebody's mother and somebody's daughter and somebody's sister. And when she was seven, she wanted to be a teacher. She didn't want to be this.
Sure.
Absolutely. Something's happened to her and we need to help her find her way. So I was happy to go in and do that training, but the officer surprised me and had one of my graduates there.
Oh,
wow. To tell that message to them. And I'm in touch with all of them. So uh-huh. I know what she's doing. Another good story. She was a hair cutter at something like Great Clips. I don't know that it's one of those types of chains.
Right.
And in her addiction, she was embezzling from her store manager. Oof. But her store manager saw her posting on Facebook what she was doing and contacted her and said, is this really happening?
Right.
And gave her job back.
Wow.
And she paid the restitution back.
Yeah.
And then the girl's mother paid her. She had her to get relicensed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's back in her old job. And half the people from the courthouse go to her. So, but she's on the other side of town from me. So I don't go there for my hair. But I mean, I am in touch with her.
That's amazing.
But I didn't know she was going to show up and talk about
That's amazing. That's
so
amazing.
Lots of aha moments.
Well, that's a wonderful way to conclude our time together. I want to thank you so very much for joining us today. We'll post some information on Change Court for those individuals who would like to learn more. I want to remind everybody viewing, please don't forget to subscribe and click the notification button. And you can always find me on martinmendelson.com. And as I end all of my videos, I want to remind everybody, please remember that life speaks to you. And if you think it doesn't, you're not listening. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.